Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined from Tallahassee by Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hello, Zach.
And joining me from Pembroke Pines is Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns.
Good morning, guys.
Well, we're recording our podcast extra early today because it's less than a week before the election, and predictably, Florida is a beehive of campaign activity. I'll be covering a Trump rally today in Tampa. Antonio is covering a Biden event in Broward County. And John, well, he's just thankful that the candidates don't make it up to Tallahassee much and he doesn't have to sweat it out on the trail today. We're going to dive right into the furious fight to the finish in America's largest battleground state. But first, y'all know what that music means. John, before I ask for a number, I want to know what flavor margarita you'll be drinking poolside today while Antonio and I bust our butts on the trail.
I think it's more likely to be a dry IPA. But I do have a number, Zach.
All right, lay it on us.
This being both Halloween week and just days before a presidential election, I can promise you it's a spooky 10.
10. All right. That's a good number. How about you, Antonio?
Well, I will be indulging myself in Johnny Walker Black after all this is over. But for now,
a whole bottle?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm going to go with 89.
89. All right. And my number is 18. I also enjoy a nice IPA. Well, that's a 10 for John, an 89 for Antonio, an 18 for me. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll let you know what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Let's start with Trump here. He's holding his rally today in the parking lot of Raymond James Stadium where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers play. Maybe he's just trying to get some of that Tom Brady magic to rub off on him. The Bucs are looking pretty good this year, and Trump's prospects in Florida also have been improving. The Real Clear Politics average of Florida polls now shows Trump with a slight lead in the state for the first time since April. Republicans are increasingly confident that Trump has a good chance of carrying Florida. It's noteworthy that Trump is only holding one Florida rally today. After Tampa, he's flying to North Carolina tonight for a rally in that critical swing state. In the past, he's held two Florida events in the same day, sometimes even three, I think, at the end of the 2016 campaign. Maybe he doesn't think his Florida campaign needs that kind of push right now, and he's more worried about other states. What do you think, John?
Well, the president is being stretched pretty thin these days. He's got a lot of must-win states facing him, and North Carolina is another toss-up now on the electoral map. Pennsylvania is tight, but leaning Biden. So is Arizona. Wisconsin and Michigan, states that Trump won, but are now looking kind of safely in Biden's corner. So it's going to be extremely difficult for him to recreate that 2016 map that carried him to the White House. His situation, you know, may be so difficult that he went to Nebraska for a freezing cold nighttime rally to try to secure the Omaha areas. They have a single electoral vote from a congressional district. That's a state like Maine that awards at least some of their electoral votes by congressional district. And of course, Trump was in Maine last Sunday with the same appeal. But if Trump managed to be dealt an inside straight in winning the electoral vote in 2016, by carrying states that Hillary Clinton wrongfully thought were solidly blue, well, this time Trump looks like he's trying to draw a royal flush, you know, to win this one. So, you know, against that national backdrop, Florida, as we've said for a while on this podcast, always seems to default Republican in elections. It's how Ron DeSantis and Rick Scott, they narrowly won the governor and the Senate race 2 years ago. It's how Trump pulled off a 1.2% margin victory in 2016, and at least partially explains why we have a Republican-controlled state house and Senate, even though registered Democrats still and always have outnumbered Republicans here. So Trump may be feeling that, you know, even though the poll numbers don't really back it up at this moment, that somehow he can feel a little more comfortable about where he stands in Florida. But, I still think we're going to see more of him before Tuesday, even if it's just another flyby visit.
Yeah, it almost seems like he's got more problems elsewhere and that, you know, Florida is close enough that maybe he can sort of, you know, pop in, stir things up a little bit and keep his campaign in the spotlight. But he doesn't necessarily have to focus on the state as aggressively as he did in 2016. I guess we'll see here. It's going to be interesting to see his closing argument tonight in Tampa. That the Tampa Bay area is a critical part of the I-4 corridor. You have Tampa and Orlando media markets. Tampa, about a quarter of all the voters in Florida are within the Tampa Bay media market, which stretches all the way down to where I am in Sarasota and includes counties north and also to the east of Tampa. You have Hillsborough County, a big urban area that Clinton did well in. Pinellas County, also in the media market, may be considered the premier bellwether county in the state right now. It went for Obama twice, and then Trump flipped it in 2016, and then Andrew Gillum won it back for the Democrats in the 2018 governor's race. So it's a swingy area, Tampa, and it is an area that you talk to political consultants, and they really think even within the I-4 corridor that maybe is a more important battleground. Trump and also Biden is going to be there today. So their paths are crossing, a rare sort of day on the trail where they'll both be in the same city. But at first, Biden is going to be down in South Florida, where Antonio is going to catch up with him. Unlike Trump, Biden is holding two events in Florida today as he works to keep the pressure on in the closing stretch. Biden is having an afternoon rally in Broward County. And after that, he'll be in Tampa, where he heads to an evening car rally. Antonio Biden has been criticized by Trump for not campaigning aggressively on the ground, the whole Biden in the basement criticism. But he's working harder than Trump in Florida tomorrow. Does he need to?
Oh, yes, he does. The Biden campaign actually has two opponents in Florida, Zach. One of them is President Trump. The other is the ghost of 2016. If you don't know what I mean by that, go to YouTube and search for videos of election night 2016 Florida results, and you'll get a slew of videos and compilations of videos from that November night 4 years ago when the networks called the state for Florida. It is chock full of images of the look of shock on people and despair as the Hillary Clinton campaign saw Florida slip away and soon thereafter the election. So suffice to say that for Democrats everywhere, that is a painful memory and not a deja vu they want to live all over again. But the issue right now isn't just 2016 poll phobia or bad memories. There are plenty of reasons why the Biden campaign needs to still go all out in this state. First of all, Florida isn't just another state. We got 29 electoral votes in Florida. That is more than 10% of the total 270 electoral votes needed to win the presidency. What's more, if Biden were to win Florida, it would almost certainly shut the door in Trump's reelection bid. It's critical that Trump win Florida if he's going to get to 270 and not have to rely, as John mentioned, on a vote in Nebraska and Maine and a field goal or a safety somewhere. So that alone should also be plenty of incentive. But right now there are signs that the Biden campaign still has work to do here, even though there are polls showing Biden up by a narrow margin. We've talked on the podcast before about how Republicans ate into the Democrats' lead in voter registrations ahead of this year's election. So there's that. But there's also the fact that Republican turnout at in-person early voting sites is closing the gap with Democrats on the number of ballots cast so far. Democrats at the start, before in-person early voting, Democrats have built a large lead in ballots turned in by mail. That lead is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. In addition, as of Wednesday morning, there are still 734,000 ballots ordered via mail by Democratic voters that have not been turned in. Democrats in a close election can't afford to leave any votes on the table. That's a lot of ballots as we're getting close to that 7 p.m. deadline to have your ballot delivered to the elections office by mail. There are also reports that early voting Democratic turnout in all important Miami-Dade County is soft. That electorate also needs to be energized. And then there are still the 500,000 mail-in ballots ordered by no party affiliation voters that have not been turned in. Someone who is an NPA voter who has yet to cast their vote is someone who still needs to be won over. So yeah, there is a lot of work to be done here in Florida. And that's why you're seeing two stops with Biden today here.
I love that analogy, Antonio, that Trump is trying to win by a, a field goal or a safety by campaigning in individual congressional districts. It just shows how crazy the Electoral College is, and you have to piece together these votes and get them anywhere that you can. And obviously, Trump would really needs to pick up the 29 in Florida, though. It's very hard to see a path for him without those votes. Antonio, you've covered Biden quite a bit. You've seen him in South Florida. What do you expect to hear from him today? What do you think? I mean, we know Trump's closing message is sort of all over the place. He's going after Hunter Biden. He's going he went after 60 Minutes at one point. I mean, it's a pretty scattershot approach to trying to hit on whatever issues he can. Biden seems to have a more focused message, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think we're going to hear more about two things: coronavirus and healthcare, and the merger of the two with the economy sprinkled in. The idea that the Trump administration has been undoing Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, at a time, as Obama said here last week, and Biden has said in the past, at the very time that Americans need healthcare the most. Then you're going to hear, we're also going to hear about the coronavirus and the pandemic and how his approach to dealing with getting America out of this pandemic, putting more emphasis on wearing a mask, on social distancing, trying to basically get the virus under control, so when a vaccine arrives on the scene, that it will be able to be much more effective and get us back to whatever that new normalcy looks like, and then make the argument that if we do these things, then the economy can recover faster. We can get all the unemployed people back to work as soon as possible, and in the meantime, get them assistance and help to get through what has been a devastating time. I mean, the amount of hardship and suffering that people are experiencing, besides the public health emergency, but from the economic crisis, is serious. And I think that's going to be his closing message, I would assume.
Yeah, the coronavirus certainly has impacted a whole lot in this country, just about every facet of life. It's also really impacted, how the candidates are campaigning. Really, one of the legacies of this campaign cycle will be how different the campaigns of Biden and Trump really look. The president has gone ahead with business as usual, holding his big rallies. His event in Tampa today undoubtedly will attract thousands of people who will be packed into close quarters, many of them probably not wearing masks. The only real concession Trump has made is that he's moved his events outdoors. Indoor events tend to be more risky. Biden, meanwhile, is holding small events aimed at attracting media attention, really, and viewers to his live stream channel. His two rallies in Florida today are car rallies. It'll probably have a few hundred vehicles. When he started campaigning in Florida, he didn't have any crowds at all. The events were purely for the media and for his live stream. John, people can debate the health implications, but from a political standpoint, what do you think the pros and cons are for the candidates of holding the type of events that they've held in this climate?
Yeah, I've been asking Democrats if they're suffering from crowd envy, because just like everything this pandemic year, the presidential campaign has been completely different. We as voters and observers of political campaigns, we are very used to seeing what Trump is doing now, and that's holding big, rowdy, lectern pounding campaign rallies. It's what we expect. It's conventional. And Biden and his surrogates, including former President Barack Obama this week in Orlando, are holding events that, they just look a little subdued. Having car horns honking at applause lines instead of people yelling and chanting, I think that would just make me feel like I'm driving on the Don Shula Expressway than at a campaign rally. But what Biden is doing from a public health standpoint is a good thing. And it's in keeping with his campaign message, which is that the coronavirus is the big crisis facing Americans right now, and it's upended our economy. And President Trump has completely mishandled it, and we're all paying for it. So for him to host anything that even let people stand up and cheer, without masks on or have them standing shoulder to shoulder, anything like that by Biden would be just detracting from that theme, which is really, you know, central to the campaign. But I had a campaign consultant, admittedly a Republican one, this week, tell me that for any candidate, not having a crowd quickly and, you know, easily responding to you, that is very difficult for the candidate. You know, that candidates feed off the energy of the crowd, the consultant told me. And he said that, you know, in late October and early November, that's when you want to have your biggest and best crowds. And it makes a difference visually as well, because for people at home watching an event on TV or the news coverage of it, you know, it's going to show a different dynamic, I guess. So in the home stretch, then, it seems like Trump has an advantage with that. Trump looks like the way we expect candidates to look. And the crowd makes people want to be part of that team. You know, I get all that, even though his approach may, you know, may eventually kill us all. But it may help him win on November 3rd. And that seems to be the only thing that matters to President Trump right now.
Antonio, what do you think? I mean, these events, they really do seem to be sort of the visual manifestation of these candidates' approach to the coronavirus. You know, you have Trump kind of saying that we need to, you know, live our lives and not be scared, and you know, he's kind of you know, kind of put that into action with his large rallies. And then you have Biden saying we need to be cautious. We need to look at the data here and not spread this around, or it's just going to get worse. And his campaigns have really visually represented that with, you know, you go to some of these events and there's a circle around each chair that's kind of the halo of social distancing, where people aren't supposed to get inside each other's circles. And there's, you know, usually just a few chairs set up, you know, for people, you know, that he's not having big audiences. They do temperature checks. They enforce mask wearing. It's just a whole different feel between these two campaigns.
Yeah, it is. But I have to say, one of the lasting images I will have of this campaign was the Obama speech in Miami on Saturday, where rather than applause, as John's mentioned, people were honking the horns at that drive-through rally. And it really threw a couple of times, it threw Obama off his cadence and off his, you know, he's got a particular way where he sets up a punchline and the honking of the horns. And you could tell that he wanted to get to that punchline. And it was he was worried that people would miss it because of the horn honking. So it has been, like you said earlier, Zach, it has been an extraordinarily strange presidential campaign. One that when this kicked off, and remember, you were in Orlando last June for the Trump's rally to formally announce he was running for president. We thought this would be a barn burner. I don't think any of us thought it would go this way. But I think, you know, the issue is, it does come down to the different styles and the way that each campaign has messaged through the way that they structure these events, how they message what their position is on the one issue that has dominated the discussion since March, which is the pandemic. And as you guys mentioned, you know, there are two, you know, Trump goes with the rallies and Biden has these very small socially distant events. And what I heard from a few people this week is that they think whoever is able to move into the middle, that Americans are will win a lot of votes. And the argument is that, you know, Americans are torn between the Trump message of it's behind us, we don't have a problem, we're moving on, we're getting back to normal, and the Biden message of, you know, social distance, we have to listen to the public health experts, that this pandemic is still with us. And that is where and a lot of Americans are sort of torn between them. And what a couple of these political analysts, a couple of business people told me this week is they're looking for a candidate to move more toward the middle. And the middle is basically, hey, the pandemic is serious, but if we take these preventive measures, we can begin recovering the economy. We can begin moving to normalcy. Normalcy wearing a face covering, but still you're out and about. You don't need to be hunkered down in your house. You don't need to be locked down. That's kind of the message they're waiting to hear. And what some I heard from a few people this week is whoever gets into that middle ground of we can defeat the virus, by taking these measures that prevent an increase in cases, but at the same time, allow us to recover as much of our life as possible, that's a candidate that will win over a lot of votes.
Yeah, that's a good point. It doesn't have to be all or nothing here, but Washington, D.C. is not necessarily known for finding a middle ground. And it should be noted that coronavirus cases are spiking again nationally. I mean, they're breaking records. So it is a very serious issue right now. Well, let's move on to some numbers. John, you had 10. You want to tell us what that's all about?
Well, Zach, I promised you a Halloween week spooky story that ties into the election. Well, Florida is one of 10 states that allow a ballot to count even if the person who cast it dies before Election Day. Florida law says that if someone casts a vote by mail ballot, it just has to be postmarked by the post office or in the possession of the local supervisor of elections before the person dies for it to count. So while we've talked about this before on the podcast, about how there's an army of lawyers on both the Trump and Biden side standing by to challenge whatever irregularities emerge in this election, evidently the votes of any ghostly voters are not going to be one of the issues in Florida. Now, 17 other states do prohibit ballots from being counted if someone dies before Election Day. Admittedly, that's kind of hard to track, given that, you know, news of a person's demise or a public record showing that someone is dead may not reach an elections office until long after the ballots are counted. But in the 23 other states, then the law is apparently silent on how you're supposed to handle voters who, well, just happen to be dead on Election Day, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures, which did this review of dead man voting laws. But of course, we in the media love the, you know, can it happen here story. And Zach, you wrote earlier this month about a Manatee County man being arrested and charged with a third degree felony for trying to obtain a vote by mail ballot for his dead wife. He said that he was only trying to test the system to see how secure it was. And apparently it was secure, because that's how county elections officials discovered that his wife indeed was dead. So I guess, you know, if there's any Halloween week lesson to learn here, I guess it's, get your ballot in early, because Election Day really is the deadline. In Florida, it's the deadline even for dead people.
Oh, John. Isn't this election scary enough for most people, John? You had to bring in dead voters.
I know. You can be counting the dead voters.
There's always an angle there.
By the way, Trump tweeted this week that you can, in some states, you can change your vote, but I guess if you're dead, that's not possible.
I know. That'd be a stretch.
If your husband does it for you to test the system. And the response from the Manatee County Supervisor election was, he tested the system and the system worked. We caught him. Yeah. And he's a Republican, Mike Bennett, who was not necessarily known when he was in the Senate for being, you know, he supported some bills that some people thought were restrictions on voting, but he has been very aggressive about saying that voter fraud is not a big issue in Florida, and, you know, that there are systems set up to catch it, and he caught it. So, Antonio, you had 89. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, 89, it refers to Florida, House District 89. Political action committees and candidates say they were pour more than $1 million into this hotly contested Florida House district race through Election Day, making the Palm Beach County seat one of the most expensive legislative races ever in Florida. You know, why so much attention? Well, one reason might be that the district is now the primary is where the primary residence of one President Donald Trump lives, where his Mar-a-Lago club falls within the boundaries of the district. And it also, it's a district, by the way, that covers much of southern Palm Beach County, the coastline, and Boca Raton and Puerto Del Rey. But it's also part of a wider strategy to flip as many Florida legislative seats blue in order for Democrats to have a meaningful say in post-census redrawing of legislative districts next year. For Republicans, it would also be a major embarrassment, you know, to lose the traditionally GOP seat, with Trump living in the district, by the way. A prospect that also has Democrats savoring their chance to turn the district blue. But the goal of a PAC called Forward Majority, which is a progressive group, they're going to spend $2.5 million for advertising spots in 19 Florida districts this year. Why? They say those are the districts that that Hillary Clinton carried in 2016, and they think Democratic House candidates can win them One of them, of course, is House District 89. Republicans hold a sizable lead in the House of Representatives, so it would take quite a stunning election night to accomplish that task. In the wave election of 2018, for example, Democrats only picked up 4 state House seats. GOP officials say there's no way that either the Senate or the House will be flipped. And even some Democrats say they don't think it will either. But here's the thing, that even the less bullish Democrats think they can win a lot of those seats, a lot of those 19 seats, and even the scorecard among Tallahassee lawmakers in the House, which they say could give Democrats a lot more leverage in drawing those districts. And of course, like I said, one of those seats is the House District 89, which incumbent Republican Mike Caruso won in 2018 by just 32 votes. The Democrat who lost that race, by the way, Jim Bonfiglio, is the one running against Caruso again this time. So there you go, gents. More than $1 million for one of those coveted $26,000 a year jobs.
Well, my number is 18. That's the combined number of events both Trump and Biden have had in Florida since September 8th. That includes 10 events by Trump and 8 by Biden, including today's events. Trump traveled to Florida 6 times. Biden came 4 times, which each of those trips often included multiple events. That means one of the candidates was in Florida every 5 days on average over the last 50 days. The state also was barnstormed by campaign surrogates, from the VP candidates to Trump's family and top Democrats. Starting Tuesday, your chances of running into Ivanka Trump or Pete Buttigieg at the Starbucks around the corner will go down dramatically. But until then, it's game on in Florida. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Cordy and Joseph Borzano. Thanks to all of you for listening. Stay safe. We're out of here.